to demonstrate good faith in attempting to abide by the terms of the treaty, not because the Germans in 1924 had come to the conclusion that indeed this was a just document and should be fulfilled, but rather in attempting to fulfill the treaty's terms, the Germans would then reveal just how unjust and impossible those terms actually were. This was a policy associated with the German foreign minister, Gustav Stresemann. He was foreign minister from 1923 to his premature death in 1929. One of the most influential statesmen of the 1920s, a man who worked assiduously for international reconciliation, the reintegration of Germany into the community of nations. He was associated with this policy of fulfillment, as he called it. Not because he believed that the treaty should be fulfilled, but he argued we've tried to block the treaty. We've tried to obscure our ability to pay. We've tried to do everything we could to avoid meeting the terms. It failed. It ended in this catastrophe of the hyperinflation of 1923 and the French occupation of the Ruhr. Now, he argued, what we should do is attempt to fulfill the terms of the treaty in good faith, show our determination to do so, and thereby reveal the impossibility of these terms. As a consequence, in 1924, the German government would ratify the Dawes Plan, which set up an economic order for German recovery and ultimately European recovery. The German government, under Stresemann's diplomatic leadership, would sign the Locarno Treaty in 1925, recognizing the western frontiers arising out of the First World War, that is the loss of Alsace-Lorraine and marginal territory along the Luxembourg and Belgian borders. Germany in 1926 applied for membership in the League of Nations and was admitted. And in 1928, Germany was a signatory to the so-called Kellogg-Briand Pact of Non-Aggression, in which the various states pledged to resolve their differences without recourse to war. But, of course, the Great Depression and the rise of the National Socialists, Hitler's appointment as chancellor in 1933, had ended this brief and hopeful era of cooperation and fulfillment. But already, before Stresemann's death in 1929, before the horrors of the Great Depression settled on Europe, the dilemmas of French policy in the post-war era had been vividly revealed. Fear of a revived Germany had led France to be the most outspoken and consistent defender of the Treaty of Versailles. France, throughout the 1920s, would relentlessly press for German fulfillment of the terms, for enforcement of the treaty, attempting to mobilize different states to enforce the terms agreed upon at the Hall of Mirrors at Versailles. However, France felt almost instantly, as we've seen, the French felt that they had been left in the lurch by Britain and by the United States. And France began casting about for allies, particularly an ally to replace Tsarist Russia. The Bolshevik regime in the East, the Soviet Union in the 1920s, was not seen as a reliable ally, a possible ally of France that would have made geopolitical sense. So France would seek to engage the new states of Eastern Europe, especially Poland and Czechoslovakia, the so-called Little Entente, creating a what was called a cordon sanitaire in the East to keep the Germans in line by creating a barrier of states on Germany's eastern frontier. In other words, to keep the Germans in and to keep the Bolsheviks out. That is, this cordon sanitaire would keep the spread of Bolshevism from seeping into Eastern Europe and also act as a counterweight to the possibility of German aggression. However, the invasion of the Ruhr in 1923, which was a reflection of French frustration with France's inability, of the Allies' inability, to press the Germans to actually fulfill the reparations portions of the treaty, the invasion of the Ruhr in 1923 revealed the limits of French efforts to enforce the treaty alone.